got, Tom?
Yeah.
When you leave the studio, you don't jump on my diving board. Get your own diving board.
I think there was no water in the pond when he'd go either.
How the hell are you in here? I didn't even open the door.
Everything's flowing backwards.
Wow, I need a day off tomorrow. How about you?
Sounds good to me. High five!
Oh, my gosh. He's in there running the board. Who is that? Who are you in there?
Steve.
Thank you, Steve. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you?
Steve's last day. Anna Scott joins us.
Have I been here every day this week? It really feels like I
think so.
Yeah.
We play that Election music days. A lot. Okay, big news. Front page of Seattle Times is that the big mega block, right? The big mega block. This is over here, Mercer Island. Yeah. Or not Mercer, Mercer Island. No. Mercer. Let's see how to put this. Is it Mercer and is that Denny that it's running
it's
along?
There's Mercer, Dexter. It's nearly 3 acres of property really in the heart of South Lake Union. Yeah. It's sat vacant for several years now. Yeah. The city trying to find a buyer. Well, now they have. A lot of people had said that they wanted the city to use this to develop affordable housing. Instead, the mayor says she's found a plan to sell it where the person who's the people buying it will actually put some affordable housing there as well.
Right here in the heart of South Lake Union, we can seize a generational opportunity to make transformational investments in housing, jobs, amazing public spaces, and transportation safety.
And this is a pretty massive deal. Alexandra Real Estate Equities has agreed to buy this. The purchase price is close to $139 million. They're also throwing in $5 million one-time payment that will go to the city's homelessness efforts.
That's a waste.
And then there's up to like $300 million in public benefits. So the company is going to build on part of the property a life sciences biomed research kind of facility. In one of those buildings that they have there, they're going to have like a 30,000 square foot community center that will be for the city, operated by Parks, but will be rent free to the city for 40 years. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Then they're also expanding dedicated bike lanes on Mercer Street, building a pedestrian plaza on the 8th Avenue. They're also on the other part of the property going to build 175 units of affordable housing that they will subsidize themselves for low-income renters earning 60% or less of the area median income, and that will go on for 50 years. That's an agreement there. They're also looking at adding 190 market-rate units to that same building. It would all be mixed up. And then you have the proceeds, right? About $143 million all told that the city will now use to about $78 million of that for their own affordable housing developments. A bunch of different programs here. About $42 million is going to be to buy properties for affordable housing developments in areas with high risk of displacement where we're going to see light rail in the future. They're also throwing in $6 million for a loan program to get low-income homeowners to build more ADUs, mother-in-laws, backyard cottages, things like that. So a wide range of things. They're going to use some of the money to pay back some debt that they have going on, and that's that.
Okay. And no one has anybody saying this is not well done or...
I haven't heard any negativity yet. Okay. The mayor told me that she expected the council to approve this. They have to sign off, and I'm hearing that they are expected to sign off on that. That'll happen in September.
Yeah, Seattle Times quoted a founder of an activist group, Share the Cities, and even though she said that it might have been it could have been more transparent, this decision, she says, otherwise, so we're really happy. This is an overall win for the city. As Jenny Durkin said, it's the biggest... a city deal in her lifetime.
Like a once, and more than once called it a once in a lifetime or generational opportunity.
So, this is pretty successful. They had 7 bids apparently, and this bid came in 40% higher than their initial bid.
Right, so they went to 7, and then they went back, and then they did a best and last proposal, and they said, look, these are the things that are important to us, stuff around light rail and helping homelessness and all of this, and they came back and really upped their bid.
Okay. Yeah, so I think this is a feather in Jenny Durkin's cap right
now. Why didn't they lease the land rather than sell it?
Because you don't get all of these extras if you lease.
Oh, yeah, you don't get that giant pile of cash to waste later on, but you actually hold on to the asset. Susie Berker owns like half of Fremont. She never sells the land. I asked her why. She goes, why should I? The value is always going up. You build the building, I'll lease you the land. And then when I'm done with whatever you're done with and the lease is up, I take the land back and do it to something else. The city would be able to hold on to the land, and then after 50 years, whatever the lease would be, they could say, well, for best use or for something else, we're going to put something else there. We own the land. The value is always going up. They like the gigantic infusion of cash. Most developers don't want to lease either. They want to own, so that probably benefits the developer. But the city could have done well. But then they have to actually manage the revenue, and then they have to be more involved in it. This is just one giant check given to the government so that the government can waste
it. So if you're wondering, are there any critics? I think we just found one.
There's one. Just one in the room.
I'm just pointing out, if you really wanted to make money on it.
Well, the thing is,
it has been there empty for years, though, right?
No. Yeah. I'm just saying, lease is opposed. Don't give away your big asset. Yeah. That's all. But they're not.
Well, maybe they didn't have any. Maybe they tried. I don't know.
Maybe people didn't want to lease it.
Maybe they didn't. All right. And hey, how about this? If you have and you burn oil to keep your house warm in the winter, and you get about the average of 225-gallon tanks, is that what these things are?
But, yeah.
In order to stop you from burning fossil fuel oil, the mayor would like to do something to you.
Yes, she is actually going to have 18,000 Seattle homeowners, they say, are relying on the crude oil product, heating oil, which is bad for our environment. They want everything to be converted by, I believe, 2030. So they're going to have everyone convert all of those homes to electric instead. And that is going to be with a 24 cents a gallon tax on the providers, the people who sell this heating oil.
No.
Yes. No. Well, no, right? Because then, when the Seattle Times talked to a business owner,
they're
like, no business is ever going to pay for this. It's all going to the consumers, which is the idea, you know? So they want to get all of these heating oil things out of here by, I believe, again, like 2030. And they say it's cheaper if you convert to heating, the electric heating, then it's going to be cheaper by about half. So I think it's $1,700 a year.
Is there any encouragement for homeowners to do this? Will they get some kind of a cut in all this?
Yeah. So depending on your income level, the money raised from this tax will all be used to help you do the conversion. And if you're low income, it's going to fully, you know, pay for it altogether. But again, that employee from the heating oil company that talked to the Times said this is like tax on old people, all of our customers, although they said old people were 50 and older, but all of our customers are people 50 and older who have older homes in Seattle, and they're going to be the ones hit by it.
And the providers of the heating oil probably can't be too happy either if they say, hey, you're bad for city business.
The cost is about $8,000 in order to convert, right? You got to get the old tank out of there and convert over there. Why don't they do this? So that's the stick. Why not carrot it and say, I'll tell you what, if you convert it, we'll cut your taxes. So whatever the cost is, an additional thing, you would then say every year you would get a tax rebate on your property as you then to convert. See, that would be the actual carrot as opposed to the stick. But the government likes the stick aspect of this, which is $54 additional a month on top of somebody who's heating their house. Now, here's the other crazy thing. Don't forget, we have 10 years until the world ends. Why are we converting over to oil? We can assume that it's going to be so hot, on fire, as Inslee says, next president, by the way, that the house is on fire. Well, the house on fire, then you don't need to heat it at all. Then in 10 years from now, we're not going to really have any winters. So you're never even going to have to worry about oil being in that tank to heat your house, right?
Wow, what side of the bed did you get up on
this morning, John? Pointing out the obvious, Tom. The world is heating up.
It won't be that warm, John.
It won't be that warm?
No.
Okay.
Not in 10 years.
When the house is on fire, it starts in the attic. If you're in the basement, it takes a while.
Oh, I see. Right. Anything else you got? Hey, by the way, one more story from you.
Yes, one more story. So big announcement from one of our city council members this morning. This came via video from Lorena Gonzalez.
I'm running for attorney general so that all people of Washington know, whether Linden, Spokane, or Aberdeen, a hospital, workplace, or even in a field picking crops, there will be a woman in the Attorney General's office.
And there you go. Standing up for everyone. She's talking about wanting to fight white nationalism. And she's, you know, talking about her experience on the council on police accountability, various other issues in our city. She's won. Now, this is, of course, part of a giant domino effect that will happen if Jay Inslee decides.
We already have an attorney general.
So if Jay Inslee decides not to run for governor again, then you've got Dow Constantine and Bob Ferguson who are going to run for governor. And then there's already several people who have expressed interest in the AG's office. Gonzalez has fully announced her candidacy today, but that's only if Bob Ferguson decides not to run again. And then we've also got Drew Hansen, Democratic state representative, and Solicitor General Noah Purcell have both formed exploratory committees. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of other people who are interested.
Gonzalez is running no matter what, I thought. That was the big announcement today.
No, that is not.
Oh, she's only announcing if Ferguson.
Yeah, she doesn't want to. She told the Times she didn't want to run against Bob
Ferguson.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yeah. So I thought today was a new development. She decided full speed ahead. No, it's not the case.
No, no. She's waiting for Bob to ascend. He has $700,000 or something sitting in his fund in order to become the next governor. That's what he's been doing every month.
But he
sends out emails.
Right. But he might not run if Inslee decides.
Run.
Well, no, if Inslee decides to go for a fourth term.
No, Inslee's done.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, even if he doesn't get in the race for president, he could opt out of running again, and then at which point the dominoes fall and we see what happens.
Hold on, are you assuming he's not going to win the presidency? What side of the bed did you get up on?
The thing is, I got up on the side of the bed that most people do, which is the right side, the correct side, not the angry side.
I'm not angry, Tom. I'm pointing out the inconsistency.
You are angry.
No, I'm responding. I get
it. We have the Seattle
gets a great
deal.
The common man. I point out, why not lease it instead of sell it?
Yes.
That would have been a smarter move.
No,
why
we don't
not use
know
a carrot or a
smarter.
Stick? We use a stick on the...
Why don't they put you in charge?
Then I don't want to be in charge. I just sit here and talk on the radio.
Well, there we have unanimity.
Plus, the other thing, I make more money doing this than I would be doing that. So,
exactly.
And ultimately...
You're not a civil servant.
I do a better job of serving the people here. Anything else? Santa?
I have one more since we're talking about Seattle. Quick update on the primary results.
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
There's really nothing new. Everything is about the same. The same two top vote getters. There you go.
Trying to go for the four on that one. You think she did it? All right. Well, three of you come back tomorrow. All right. Not a bad mood.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
No.
Just test.
What's wrong with my ideas? Lease instead of sell.
No, it's the anger with which you deliver them. I think you could have easily proposed, say, so this, everyone is showering praise. Even the critics on Durkin are showering praise on this big deal she's managed to pull off. And then you say, now, has anyone ever considered, why not, could the city actually lease this and be more, and have, you know, create more profits? But instead, you use it as a bully club
cudgel.
To beat her down.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing wrong with that. I got a whole supply of cudgels over here.
Especially
I
got
homemade cudgels. Got a YouTube
You need
channel.
A day off tomorrow.
You know what? I'm going to take a day off tomorrow.
Yeah.
What are you going to do tomorrow?
I think I'm going to take the same day off.
You think, what's this show going to be like tomorrow?
Good Cairo luck. Knights?
Yeah, Steve in there running the board? Good luck tomorrow, I'll tell you right now. Are you in there? Andrew, you going to be running the board tomorrow?
I'll be here tomorrow.
Okay. All right. So Tom and I both not here, so they're moving the nighttime guys
into
the daytime guys. The things they're going to experience is hardly anyone listens from 7 to 10, and hardly anyone listens from 9 to noon. So that's the beauty there. By the way, quick update for you. Yes, we will be awarding the MyPillow from our Facebook page. Jacob is putting it together at this point, getting the three finalists of the ugliest, dirtiest, grossest pillows. And then you'll get a chance to vote on it.
To vote on it, okay.
Yes, all right. There's a billionaire owner of SoulCycle. He also owns the Miami Dolphins, and he faces backlash because he would like to express his opinion as to who would like to support in the presidential candidacy. And the money's going to Donald Trump. He's got a fundraiser. What are they charging, $5,000 or $10,000?
$250,000 for an audience with the president.
Yeah, that's about right. So you normally pay $10,000 to get a plate to sit next to George Clooney and then get a chance to see Barack Obama. So in this case, if you get a chance to do a face-to-face, a handshake, it's $250,000 or something like that. And people are mad at this guy, and he's not apologizing for the fact that he supports the president and has these businesses.
So one of the reasons this is getting a lot of attention, Billy Eichner pointed this out, and he's going after Equinox is a very popular the overseer of SoulCycle, which is incredibly popular, and a lot of maybe more liberal leaning people partake of Equinox possibilities and attend SoulCycle, and he is furious with the fact that he's raising money for Donald Trump, because he thinks Donald Trump is enabling racism and everything else. And so he mentioned that he was canceling his membership. And then the Miami Dolphins wide receiver, Kenny Stills, came out, again, a player on the team owned by this billionaire owner of SoulCycle, and, you know, raised his objection. So there are a lot of people now saying, wow, you know, we should withdraw our membership from SoulCycle if we want to, that this is kind of a form of protest.
Yeah.
It's not that he's not allowed to have his opinions. The idea is, though, are there economic consequences for those opinions? And the thing is, I wish that I was a member of SoulCycle and was fit enough to be a member of SoulCycle so I could quit and protest, but I can't because I'm not. And then the question is, this raises the whole issue of what a friend of mine calls chick philanthropy. She loves Chick-fil-A, but she abhors the owner's stance on LGBT issues. So every time that she goes and eats at Chick-fil-A, she also gives money to like an LGBT
cause. I don't believe her, but that's a nice story.
And that's the thing that, boy, you're really a... I can't believe a friend of a friend, huh? It's Andrew Walsh's friend. But anyway, the idea is here, people have to make compromise, economic compromise all the time. Let's say you really love SoulCycle, but you're mad at the profits of SoulCycle are going to a guy who supports somebody that you can't abide.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you can find other ways, or you could cancel your membership at SoulCycle if you want to.
Yeah. Is the guy allowed to support Donald Trump?
Of course he's allowed to. It's a free country.
So, and it's a free country that you can decide not to go to, or say that you're not going to go to SoulCycle. You'll
keep
going to SoulCycle. It'll be painful for you knowing that part of your money is now going to Donald Trump.
Right. And it works the same way with a good liberal business that a conservative attends and may enjoy. And so you have to make those kinds of ethical decisions every day of your life.
The fact that you can dock somebody like Julian Castro's brother, how is his name?
Joaquin,
to hold MSNBC. He didn't dox anybody with his post. So he went, you can find all these names. I think there's 11 retirees and then two women. And he went into public records and found people that had max out donations of, what, $2,500 or something like that?
To Donald Trump.
To Donald
Trump. So he's a representative of San Antonio, so in his district.
Right, so he collects the names for you, and then he sends them out on Twitter.
Some of these Republicans said that I doxed these people. Doxing is when you tell somebody's physical address or phone number. None of that was in this graphic that I shared, which was first put up and circulated by a local Indivisible group.
So what is he trying to do? He says people misunderstood his attempt to. What's he trying to accomplish?
My post was actually a lament. If you look at my language, I said that it's sad that these folks, many of whom are prominent business owners in San Antonio, a city that's about 65% Hispanic, their customers, the people that have made them wealthy, their employees, the people that have worked for them for years, many of those folks are Hispanic, and they're giving their money to a guy who's running ads talking about Hispanics invading this country. We saw the cost of that in El Paso over the weekend, that people died. The manifesto that mm-hmm. guy wrote could have been written by the people that write Trump speeches.
Billy Geis asked Castro about what he's trying to do. He says, what are you trying to accomplish?
What do you say to those people this morning who said, I made a campaign donation and now I'm going to be harassed? I'm going to have people protesting outside my business or perhaps even my home.
Well, the first thing is that I don't want anybody harassed or targeted.
But they will be because you put
too late. They're already doing it.
Their names in public.
Look, that was not my intention.
But that's
these things
happen.
These things are public. No, what I would like for them to do is think twice about supporting a guy who is fueling hate in this country.
That's such a dangerous place you're getting to.
Yeah,
really,
but
you can't express an opinion.
No, you can, John.
You can.
It has consequences.
But then an elected
not
official goes ahead. But
Tom,
what was his intent?
His intent, I think, was to
shame them.
Yes. The idea is expose them. Make it available. There are people that
expose
we don't
them to
know.
What? Expose them to the fact that they support
Donald Trump. Yes.
And the thing is
that if, especially in this community where Donald Trump, his calling card when he first came down the escalator was to go after Hispanics.
No.
Yes. He went after Mexicans. Some of them are good immigrants and some aren't.
He's going after the
criminals.
They're
rapists. They're murderers. Right. Yes. And that kind of anti-Hispanic rhetoric in a town that's 65% Hispanic is shocking and might have an economic
and
effect.
And they probably voted for the guy. He has more votes, more support than Romney had. I mean, it's so awful that a public official does this.
In El Paso or San Antonio, I guess we're talking about, I don't think he had more votes than Romney.
No, Hispanics supported Trump more than Romney.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, there you go.
I doubt that's the case in San Antonio. But anyway, I think that there can be a legitimate economic consequence. And I agree.
Let's shame people so that they don't come out and tell who they vote for.
The thing is, if you feel like it's a shame to be a Trump supporter, then so be it.
You should, because anybody that supports a racist is a racist. We'll be right back.
Well, it's a concern.
It's a load of crap. KIEL, Laura Keel. She's got the best team working with her. And they're just waiting for you to give them a call. 1-888-778-KIEL. Keel Mortgage, certainly the best. They've been around for so long. Everyone in the Northwest, whether you, your friend, your neighbor, someone you know, most likely did a mortgage with Keel Mortgage. You will love, love, love the customer service. Absolutely the best. Thank you, Laura Keel, for being part of the show. And don't forget, at some point, I think tomorrow or maybe Monday, Tuesday, launch it. I got to get Jacob to do it. The pictures of the three horrible pillows, and you get a chance to vote. And what I'm looking for primarily is I'd like to get a higher voter participation rate on the three ugly pillows
than the primary turnout.
The primary turnout. That's what we're looking for, just as a farce percentage. I thought of this yesterday. Don't people, isn't there a higher participation rate when it came to like American Idol? People calling in and voting on American Idol than it did in the U.S.
I suspect that's true. However, it's unfair because American Idol, I think you can keep vote calling and calling until the same people
vote. You can do that in Chicago and in Seattle. All right. No one wants to talk about the booming economy. An interesting piece in The Atlantic basically saying the Democrats don't want to talk about it because it's the big card that Trump is supposed to be playing, which, by the way, he never plays.
Yeah.
And then the Republicans don't want to take credit for it because the economy is going on all cylinders, but they're fueling it with something that they didn't like during the Obama administration.
That's right. This is a very interesting article. Why is it with the booming economy that it's not getting any political traction? And, of course, it makes a lot of sense. If you're a Democrat, you do not want to highlight probably the best thing about the presidency of Donald Trump, which is the economy is on an upward swing like nobody's business. And so the Democrats aren't going to highlight that. They'll highlight the remaining inequities within that booming economy. So why aren't the Republicans and or Donald Trump heralding this great explosion? And it's the thrust of this article is because it's based on deficit spending. Deficit spending is what the Republican Congress refused to give Barack Obama when he requested it during his administration. They changed their tune when they had a Republican in there, and a part of the deficit spending involved big tax cuts. So they went for that, and they think that the proposal is that government spending went up, federal taxes went down, deficits rose, households spent the cash, and growth accelerated. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the Keynesian argument that fuels a lot of Democratic economic theses. And so right now, the Republicans want to take the benefit of it, but they actually, if they go drill down too deep, it's for counter the argument they had been made about how important it is not to increase our deficits.
Right.
So it's kind of a dilemma.
It is kind of, they are sort of stuck if you believe sort of the general concept of the article. From 08 to 09 to 10, he had control. The president had control, Barack Obama, of the House and the Senate. And they were able to push through major spending that was to get us out of the recession, a trillion some dollars of shovel ready jobs that never materialized. And then what happened is when the Republicans stepped in there and then they said, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to ask for all sorts of reduced spending. We want to try to cut this and cut that. Obama's, every single one of his budgets came forward. And Republicans and Democrats, both of them like the jobs that they have. So they want to continue to have their jobs. So they'll continue to take your money and give it to people that will keep them in office. So both are guilty, right? Generally, the idea of deficit spending in order to stimulate the economy, the Keynesian idea, is back again. It came out when Janet Yellen got into place, and they were asking her all sorts of questions about, does the government have a role in order to stop inflation and to control the cost of money to help control unemployment?
That's the whole point of the Fed.
Right. She said, oh, absolutely. We have a big role in this. Well, it was the greatest economist in the world, Milton Friedman, that came along and said, well, actually, you're talking about the Phillips curve, and that thing is nonsense, and he can prove it, and he proved it, and he won a Nobel Prize to prove it. So they're back at it again. The Republicans love to spend money, so do the Democrats spend money, and pox on both their houses. What else are you going to say about it?
Well, I think that it is interesting that the argument that Democrats can make against this Keynesian philosophy that the Republicans have now apparently adopted under Trump is that we don't know how long, you know, how high can you go in terms of deficits without it actually, you know, corrupting you. One of the arguments the Democrats have made about these tax cuts is it's like a sugar rush boom to the economy and it doesn't have lasting influence. If that's the case, then that's a concern. However, as this article points out, things may have really changed. The way we think the economy worked now that we are transnational, the globalism might actually change some of the old economic rules that we used to live, by in the 19th and 20th centuries. Mm-hmm. And so maybe this kind of concern about deficit spending is old hat, is too 20th century. We'll have to see. But right now, the Trump administration is the beneficiary of this sugar boost of tax cuts.
The total amount of money that the government has to spend, what happens is you end up like Greece, where the big portion of your money that you want to be able to spend on something else, you can't because you're spending it to pay off your interest on this, right? China buys all of our debt. So do senior citizens buy all of our debt. So we have that. At some point, you get to a point where there's just too much. Right now, we owe $90 trillion to senior citizens or soon-to-be senior citizens as the boomers move forward to retirement. We don't have that money. The tax cuts work only if you combine them with spending cuts. You can't do the same. And for those people that said, oh, no, no, the tax cuts will pay for themselves. No, they wouldn't pay for themselves because you then continue to slap another $1 trillion on top. So you cannot continue to do that. But apparently, we just keep pushing it further and further down the road to our grandchildren, where the average person being born today at Swedish Hospital, I think, is handed a bill. Is it $58,000? Something like that on the credit card of the U.S. taxpayer. So it's going to be your grandkids, Tom, my grandkids, that will see tremendous taxes on top of their income in order to try to pay down some of this debt.
Perhaps. But the argument then is, would we be willing to give up whatever economic boost we got in the last, you know, three and a half years to not have that the case? Because the argument right now is that most people on both sides of the ledger think having a booming economy probably is a plus.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the idea is if we want to become deficit hawks, we could do that, but it might make for painful existence for the next 10 years.
Well, does the government rush in and fill the void that the private sector would not fill? Government spending keeps a big portion of the economy rolling along. What they did when they cut the capital gains, they just allowed American manufacturers to compete against other manufacturers around the world by bringing them in line. I think we're now like in the fourth or fifth as far as capital gains. Ireland cut capital gains. Switzerland cut capital gains. Norway, Denmark all cut capital gains. We followed along with them.
But they had higher personal taxes. That's what's interesting.
Right.
And that's the kind of decision
And they've also
that they
become
made.
Poorer countries as a result of it. But
well, maybe.
No, not maybe. Definitely.
Well, I don't know. What do you mean? Poorer countries.
Went
I mean, they have
fourth,
better.
With the fourth richest country in the world, Sweden, it's now 14th. And Denmark and Norway are also struggling. And that's why they've cut a lot of their welfare programs. They can't afford
it. Cut a lot. I mean, that's not the case. Most of it. If we had any approach to what Scandinavia or the Netherlands has, we'd be stunned. We'd consider ourselves a socialist country. They still provide so many services, and the rich are not nearly as rich as the rich in America are. That's beneficial for them.
Well, that's why they're getting poorer, right?
Well, maybe, but if there's a healthy life and they're not that much poorer.
Okay. And whose money is it? Society's or the individual's? Thank you. Society.
It's a trade-off. Yeah.
Yeah. Right back. Online Trade Academy text line 973-989-8373. All right, here's what's happening. Tomorrow, Tom, not here. You're on a plane going to
San Antonio. Right. I have a nephew getting married in 110-degree weather. Right. Thank you very much. And you?
I am on a plane flying somewhere else, so so long, so goodbye. But we would normally do the movie review on Friday.
That's right. So we're moving it up.
Moving it up.
We want to make sure you didn't miss it, John.
Okay, good.
And see if this rings memory bells for many people. Yes, after almost 20 years on the air, the animated kids show Dora the Explorer is an undeniable worldwide brand. She's a spunky 7-year-old Latina who, with the help of her monkey boots, a talking backpack, a singing map, and you, yes, you, the viewers, she accomplishes great things each episode. Finding a big red hill, returning a lost baby bear to his family, or saving fairy tale land. Now, designed for preschoolers, the educational show is intentionally formulaic, with Dora always facing a multi-step task. And yes, this can get tedious.
First, go across the icy ocean, past the snow hills, through the cave, and that's how you get to the princess. So remember, ocean, hills, cave, princess. Say it with me. Ocean, hills, cave, princess. Ocean, hills, cave, princess!
Yes, now to complete her task, Dora not only has to use her handy map and the contents of her backpack, she also has to stop Swiper the Fox from stealing her stuff. Other constants, Dora saying a few things in Spanish, making up random songs on the spot, and consistently breaking the fourth wall to ask her viewers questions.
Hola, soy Dora. I'm going to read from my storybook. Do you like books? We love books.
Yeah, books are cool.
Me encantan los
libros. Yeah, books.
We love books.
Now, if you're having a hard time imagining a full-length, live-action Hollywood movie of Dora, I don't blame you. I felt the same way before I saw Dora the Explorer and The Lost City of Gold. What could be more insipid than 105 minutes of Dora methodically completing a series of tasks and then methodically celebrating those tasks? But thankfully, the filmmakers are well aware of the problem and take a few daring risks with the material. Most noteworthy, they make Dora significantly older. In the movie's storyline, Dora's parents have decided that after being homeschooled in the Peruvian jungle for the last 10 years, Dora needs to attend an American high school. So, how do you translate a preschool sensibility into a teenage one? It's very tricky, but actress Isabella Moner nicely manages to channel Dora's innocent earnestness into that high school setting. For instance, unlike all of her new American peers, Dora's not at all self-conscious, but that just makes her an even bigger target of teenage scorn. Endearingly clueless, she's honestly puzzled by her new nickname, Dorka. But her intelligence, practical know-how, and implacable optimism come in handy, however, when Dora and some classmates are kidnapped and forced to fend for themselves back in the jungle. Their jungle exploits make up the bulk of the film. Now, these adventures are pretty generic, I grant you. Quicksand, Indiana Jones-like booby traps, poisonous darts, treasure-hunting villains. But the film has so much fun with Dora's TV show roots. In one clever sequence, the entire movie turns into the clunky animation of the original show. At another point, Dora makes up a silly bathroom song on the spot to cajole a teenage classmate into pooping in the forest. And the film even embraces the show's breaking the fourth wall convention. In the very beginning of the film, for instance, Dora stares straight at the camera and asks the movie audience a question as her bewildered parents look on.
Dora, it's time for dinner.
Delicioso!
Can you say delicioso?
She'll grow out of it.
This kind of cheekiness may be foreign to the sensibilities of the original series, but it smartly broadens the movie's appeal to non-preschoolers. It's this knowing, almost postmodernist wit that saves Dora the Explorer and the City of Lost Gold.
So you liked it?
I did indeed. I quite surprised myself.